This week's episode of Legends of Gotham is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/Gotham. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Again, that link is audibletrial.com/Gotham. Welcome to Legends of Gotham. I'm Bill Meeks.
And I'm Anne-Marie DeSimone.
And we thought, since Gotham's coming back this Monday, January 5th, we'd kind of put together a best-of compilation of everything we did the first semester for Gotham.
The hat's distracting, but I'm okay with it.
Oh, is it the Gotham hat? We'll show you guys this in our new episode on Tuesday, I think, a little more. It's a gift from a listener. But yeah, basically we're going to throw a bunch of like little clips, little theories. I believe one of your theories about the Penguin stealing his victim's clothes.
Yep.
And other stuff. Who killed the Waynes?
We got that. We got that on lockdown.
And we'll be throwing those short little clips around some of the cool cast interviews and stuff we've got this year. And like,
we've been so lucky with all these cast interviews and all the interaction. Mm-hmm. We're so grateful for anyone out there. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
But especially, it's a slightly cut-down version of the game we played with Renee Montoya and Crispus Allen, Victoria and Andrew, who came on the podcast a few weeks ago. And we definitely wanted to throw that out there because I know that it got published to iTunes weird. So if you didn't pick that up, it's episode 17, The MCU Joins Gotham or something like that. But a really good interview with both of them and a team up with the Gotham TV podcast. But you'll get to hear the game we played, and we'll have that. We'll have another interview with Victoria, Renee Montoya, a call-in from the director, TJ Scott, the guy who directed Spirit of the Goat, and another one. And then we'll close it all off with a couple of years ago, I was covering Dragon Con for Bleeding Cool, and I was able to attend a press conference with Burt Ward and Adam West. We hope to see you guys on Tuesday for our first episode back. No, but definitely when you guys get done watching the episode on Monday night, shoot us an email, legendsofgotham@gmail.com, or a voicemail at 424-274-2352.
What did you say? Again, you had the 274 part.
Again, that's 424-274-2352. So stay tuned for our cavalcade of Gotham stars. And kind of a best of our first half season. And we'll see you guys on Tuesday, and I hope to see you then.
So Fish's mom. Can we talk about her for a minute?
Yeah. Fish's mom, you mean the person
who... The old lady singer?
In the story?
Yeah, no. Nope, the old lady singer.
Wait, that was Fish's mom?
Oh my goodness, yes.
No way.
Totally. Totes Fish's mom in a silver glittery sequins dress. Mm. I heard you telling her stories. I really wanted her to slap Fish.
Mm-hmm.
Because if anybody can slap Fish, it's her mama.
See, I one thing I noticed was the song she was singing. Mm. The lyrics were basically, "If I die, ain't nobody's fault but mine." It kind of felt like foreshadowing for Fish. Because, you know, right now Fish Mooney's backing herself into a situation where her pride is going to get her killed. Mm-hmm. Because she's so convinced that she's completely and totally awesome, which I'm sure is how she would put it. There's no way that Penguin or Falcone or Maroni or anybody. Marconi or Macaroni or anybody is going to get
Macaroni has the first name,
but is going to get the advantage on her. And I mean, these lyrics are very much like you're going to build your own coffin kind of thing.
Yep,
and
you're putting the nails in it yourself.
And that's where Fish is going for sure.
Oh, it's so obvious. So, I think she'll really be lucky to make it out of this season.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually starting to think she'll be lucky if she makes it out of this half season.
Yeah, and that makes me sad because I just like having Jada on the show. I just think it's pretty awesome. But basically, I just want to see more of her mom.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, she's not going to rat out her daughter, but... Who knows?
Yeah, you kind of have to wonder what the real story is too, since that was obviously a very fake story.
Yeah,
and like, why is Fish really the way she is?
Exactly. Yeah. What really happened?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's that.
I'm gonna guess. I don't know. She lost a favorite pet or something.
Classic
villain origin story. Speaking of villains, I just would like to point out that Bobby. Okay, now normally here I would definitely, you know, start talking about the episode, but before we do, we have a message from here. I'll show his Twitter account real quick here. Bloop. From director of this episode, TJ Scott, went ahead and called in and left us a 2.5-minute message.
Woo.
And talking a little bit about how we got added to Gotham and how it was working on it and everything. So we'll go ahead and play that, and then we'll start talking about the episode.
Yay.
Hey, guys. This is TJ Scott, director of episode 104 of Gotham, Arkham, and 106, The Spirit of the Goat. I just dropped by to say I'm hoping you guys enjoyed watching this week's episode as much as I enjoyed shooting it. And I've been asked what my favorite part of directing Gotham is. Well, first off, I love the pilot that Bruno Heller wrote and Danny Cannon directed. So when they asked me to come on board, I jumped at the opportunity, obviously. For me, coming on board a series when it's just starting up is the coolest thing, because I enjoy the big puzzle of how to shoot it stylistically, and especially working with the actors as they're first creating the roles. And this series has such a great ensemble cast with Ben McKenzie, Donald Logue, Jada Pinkett, Robin Lord Taylor, Aaron Richard, Sean Purty, Dave Mazouz, Victoria Cartagena, Cameron, Corey Michael Smith, Sabrina, Andrew Stewart Jones, Richard Kine, Drew Powell, David Zayas. Oh, but I forget anyone. And then on this episode, it was super fun to have my friend, Keen K. Kazim of Black Sails as my guest star. And I also got to introduce Mackenzie Lee as Liza. And I think she's going to be a big star. So this is like a big dream team cast for me to work with. Gotham also, the city's a real character in the series too. And I, shooting in the streets of New York was such a treat. We shot scenes in Gladwell's office was set up in, just outside Wall Street. And the scenes where James Gordon slams the Penguin up against the walls was one block from Wall Street, with hundreds of people watching. We shot Fish Mooney's girl fight in the Brooklyn Navy Yards. We shot Arkham in Staten Island. We shot the Maroni restaurant scenes in Brooklyn. And we shot the opening rooftop scene with Gladwell, where he kills the councilman right across the street from Madison Square Gardens. So that was certainly a thrill. And then the show has these amazing sets. You know, the police precinct and Fish Mooney's bar and Barbara Keene's apartment, they're all built on the sound stages. And they're all designed by the amazing production designer Doug Craner, built from scratch by his team. Anyways, I will continue to check in here with you guys, and I hope you follow me and the rest of the cast on Twitter, and we'll keep you apprised of what's going on the show. And we tend to live tweet a bit, so please join us, and I'll see you in the movies. Bye.
Thank you very much, TJ.
Ah!
Yeah, it was so cool, and I really hope you can check in again with us when your next episode comes out in a
couple
weeks.
That would be awesome, yeah. Leave the gun, take the cannoli.
Take the cannoli. Okay, so Anne-Marie, what did you think of Arkham overall? Oh, and thanks again, TJ, by the way.
Yes, thank you so much, TJ. We really appreciate it. You and your cheesy.
Innovation of the setting, like, because I had never thought about it before, but... In office, there's a lot of deadly stuff around in an office.
Yes,
like,
there is. I can, yes.
Just the printers alone, I mean, could crush some heads for sure.
They really could. So could those giant monitors they had.
Yeah, you have some office supplies back there.
I do have some office supplies. Here, let me.
Should we have a notebook fight?
Would you like to have, we can have a notebook slap fight. Oh, no!
I think we should have a notebook slap fight.
All right, hold on.
Hand me a notebook. Leave those scissors there, though.
Yeah, let's leave the scissors.
Let's see how deadly this gets. Let's see if one of us dies.
Okay, that was...
dead.
Goodbye.
That's a reason you should watch us live, because we have notebook slap fights.
Maybe it's because I'll start throwing index cards.
Oh, you're... Ow, paper cut. Oh, infected. Oh, dead.
I'm dead. I win!
No, but offices...
I get the job! No, I don't want it.
Offices are an extremely dangerous setting, which wasn't apparent beforehand. We got it was weird. Like, right before we were about to start, we got this weird voicemail message from, I think it was Vicky, maybe, or
Vicky?
Something. I don't know. I guess we'll stay quiet, and we'll figure out who it is.
Hey, guys. This is Victoria Cartagena. I play Dan Montoya on Gotham. And I just really want to thank you so much for all your enthusiasm about this show as the premiere gets closer. We're having a blast, and we're actually completing episode 7, which has a lot of exciting sequences that let's just say my stunt double was needed. So buckle up. Anyway, look out for that one, and I hope you'll enjoy the show. See ya.
Yay! And yes, that was a very special message
to
Victoria, who you guys might not know, plays Montoya, Renee Montoya on Gotham. And actually, we'll go ahead and start introducing our Gotham podcasters here. Thank you, Victoria, by the way.
Yes, thank you.
We coordinated that over Twitter this week, and thank you so much. It was very much appreciated. Okay, Penguin. What did you think of Mr. Oswald Cobblepot?
He was everything I expected him to be.
Oh, yeah.
He was perfect.
I did see some people saying with that guy at the end, though, that he killed him for the sandwich. No, I think he killed him because there was going to be a witness there of him, and he doesn't want anyone to know he's alive.
Well, he kind of can't. It's not to his benefit either.
Yeah, it would put his life in danger, and also
everyone's.
All this manipulation he's doing would be for naught. And also, I almost want to say those are the clothes he's wearing in that Did Anyone Ever Tell You You Walk Like a Penguin scene from the trailers.
Okay, so the penguin. Now, we didn't get to see too much of him, but one thing I've noticed is he wears his victims' clothing like trophies.
I like that.
I'm a little creeped out.
I like that in a penguin.
You like that in a penguin?
I do.
I'm thinking that maybe this is how the penguin initially got fat, because he was wearing lots of clothes.
He just kept putting on
layers. Yes! He keeps putting on layers.
I think that might be my favorite concept we've come up with on the podcast since it being the origin story of the mustache. Like, that's amazing.
That's how come he got fat, because he was hiding under all these layers. You can see it. So that side note, that poor farmer, he ain't gonna live very long.
Oh no, not at all.
I'm surprised he's still alive.
This is something I think we're gonna see in every episode too, but it's all based on a theory Anne Marie came up with a couple episodes ago. I want you to explain this theory in full, and then we'll talk about what happened in this episode with it.
Okay, so the penguin. Things we've noticed with him, with his kills. Basically, he takes their clothes. Mm-hmm. Whether he's killing them for their clothes or not, I'm not completely sure, but he sort of wears them as trophies. And it looks like he's sort of making different outfits with them now a little. Mm-hmm. But then we see him in this episode literally kill someone for their shoes. He was a little creepy when he approached the guy, too. He's like, so, which size shoes do you wear?
And wait, what's your theory as to what the purpose of these clothes are?
This is how he gets fat.
Yes, he's going to become huge and rotund.
Because he's
going to
be wearing all the clothes.
Keeps putting on the layers of his victims, and I love this theory. And
this week, we have a special interview with our good buddy, friend of the show, and fantastic actress, Victoria Cartagena. I think I said it right.
Cartagena or Cartagena?
Cartagena?
Yeah, we listened to the recording of her.
We're really bad at pronouncing things. I'm so sorry.
Terribly bad at pronouncing
things. Terribly bad at last names. Yay, Vicky.
I know, we're very excited. Actually, I think I see her coming down the way there. There she is.
Hold on.
There she is. For people who are listening to the audio version, we have an overlay of Victoria here.
I might be petting her hair.
It's possible. But for people who are watching the live video, we're still going to hang out here. We'll actually be able to look at chat a little bit. This is a bit of a long piece, about 7.5 minutes, pre-recorded interview with Renee Montoya herself. So we'll go ahead and get started with that right now. Were you familiar with Montoya before being cast?
I wasn't familiar with Montoya before being a part of Gotham. I found out about her once I was cast in the role, and I chose not to read the comics while I was shooting the pilot because I wanted to be introduced to her as Bruno Heller, the creator and the writers, introduced her to me. But after the pilot, I have a cousin who's a fanboy, and he told me a little about her, and I Googled her and just found that she was so fascinating that I needed to get to know her more. And so I started with Gotham Central and have since moved on to 52.
How was she presented to you? What appealed to you as an actress about the character?
Renee was presented to me in the pilot as a very smart, driven, and passionate detective who was in recovery and was still in love with her ex, who is engaged to a man who she thinks is corrupt. And what appealed to me as an actress was the fact that, you know, that yes, she's this dedicated cop, and you're given a hint about a dark past that she has. So, you know, you're reading it and you're reading the script and you know that this is a character that's not just going to be a one-dimensional character. She has a lot going on at work and in her personal life, and it's all interconnected, and it can really be fleshed out and explored in a really interesting way.
What is your process for memorizing scenes?
My process for memorizing lines, I wish it was more interesting process, but I usually just read the scene over and over, and eventually it sinks in.
What kind of stuff did you work on before Gotham?
I went to acting school, the American Musical and Dramatic Academy, and did a little theater at school. And when I graduated for 2 straight years, I did a lot of off Broadway stuff that you get from backstage, and that was pretty much it, because then I got an agent and went straight into doing television, and I shot about 3 pilots, not including Gotham, that only one of them was picked up. It was called The Bedford Diaries, and it only lasted like 8 episodes into the first season. So after that, I did all the New York guest starring shows, like I've done Unforgettable, Blue Bloods, The Good Wife, Elementary, SVU, anyone I could that they would allow me to be a part of. And yeah, that was basically it for Gotham.
We saw you've been reading 52. Are you liking Montoya's journey? What part of it excites you the most as somebody playing the character?
So, yes, I have started reading 52. I'm only at the very beginning where Renee just meets Vic Sage, the original Question, and he's asked her to do some surveillance at a warehouse or something. For what I understand or what I've read so far, it seems that she's hit rock bottom, and I may be wrong. It may not be her bottom. Maybe she has more to go, but she's lost her professional partner, Crispus Allen, and feels a tremendous amount of guilt about that. She's been drinking heavily, and so much that her life partner, Dario Hernandez, has left her, and we know that her parents have disowned her. So at this point, she's gone through a tremendous amount of guilt, sadness, grief, and anger. And it's just so darn interesting to read. It's quite a journey that and I find myself like loving her more as I get to know her better, and really, really rooting for her. And you know what's most exciting for someone playing the character is that there's so much material to choose from if the writers want to go that route. Just reading the comics has made me such a huge Renee Montoya fan, and I have so much respect for her. And I have to tip my hat out to the writers who created and wrote for her, Greg Rucka and Jeff Johns, because they've just handled her beautifully.
What shows are you watching right now?
All right, so I watch way too much TV, and people are like, how do you have the time to do it? So I found that I like to watch TV as I'm running on my treadmill, so that's why I have the time to do it. So here goes. Okay, so Orphan Black, because Tatiana Maslany is a genius, and it's just an amazing, fun show. The Walking Dead, Game of Thrones, Derek, Orange is the New Black, American Horror Story, The Bates Motel, The Fault, Getting On, which is on HBO. I love it so much. It's Laurie Metcalf. It's hilarious. I loved her for so long since Roseanne, and she's just, I adore her. Brilliant to watch.
You're from Philly. Most people would ask you your favorite cheesesteak. We're going to ask you what your favorite pizza shop was instead.
So there are 2 places that my family ordered from. My personal favorite was Little Sicily, which was located in South Philly on Delaware Avenue, which now is Columbus Boulevard, but will forever be Delaware Avenue to me. And the other place was the pizza place on 7th Street, 7th and Morris, which we called the 7th Street Pizza because, well, it was on 7th Street. And I don't even know if it was that the 7th Street Pizza was better than Little Sicily, but this is like a time before the internet. And so, we all had yellow pages, and that's how you got your pizza place. So in my house, the yellow pages, it was just always missing. So, 7th Street had this just annoying commercial, horrendous, with this jingle for their phone number, and it would just stick in your head. So it'd be like 755-990 is the pizza place. So you just, it'd be in your head. So when you ordered pizza and you couldn't find the yellow pages, you just hummed a little jingle and you called them. So Yeah, that's the place. And now you know why I also don't do musicals. And so as long as we're on the topic, cheesesteaks, I'm not sure what the best is, but if you're going to choose between two of the most famous places in Philly, Gino's or Pat's, I would definitely say Pat's.
What's been the most challenging scene to shoot so far?
The most challenging scene for me to shoot so far was in a scene in The Balloon Man, when the MCU pays a visit to Fish Mooney. And it's just mostly because I'm a huge Jada Pinkett Smith fan, and I have been forever. And I'm also just in awe of what she is doing with this character. I really, really enjoy it. And, you know, I kept getting nervous, but I knew that, you know, Montoya would not be nervous, or she would not show it like I would. So I had to keep giving myself a good talking to before each take. And yeah, I survived it. Well, she's really nice and lovely, so it was great, and it all turned out well.
Anything else?
So thank you so much, guys, for talking with me and allowing me to chat. You guys are awesome. I've listened to a few of your podcasts, and I get a hoot out of it. So thank you, Bill and Anne-Marie, and I look forward to talking to you guys. Bye.
The end. Da-da-da.
Thank you very much, Victoria.
Yay, thank you.
Yay.
I'm gonna pet your hair.
That was so great. Before we get into the main discussion of this week's episode, which I really, really love, The Balloon Man, some of you might know that a few weeks back, we submitted some clips and got into the Gotham fan trailer.
Follow up on the Arkham connection.
Arkham's been closed for 10 years.
You're hurting yourself.
I'm testing myself.
Somebody has to take over. Might as well be me.
However dark and scary the world might be right now, there will be light. There will be light.
We submitted some clips and got into the Gotham fan trailer they released over the summer before the show started.
Yay!
And, you know, so we were on, like, Fox TV and stuff, which was really cool. And they told us they were going to be sending us a Gotham prize pack, which we didn't know what it was, but we were pretty excited. And then it was so long, we figured we would never get it. But we got it. And Amory's going to open it right now. And
it showed up!
Yep, so open up the box and then just, you know, hold up the items and hand them over to me, and I'll hold them right up to the camera.
Hand them over to me so I can never give
them
back.
Well, tell us what they are. Okay. Yeah, tell the listeners of the audio podcast.
All the listeners. Listeningers?
That's listeningers.
We have two lanyards.
Ooh, here, let's show these to the camera.
Show these to the nice people in the camera.
Yeah, they have a nice strap that says Fox Gotham and then a little picture of the cast and some Ben McKenzie.
Wow.
Okay. Oh, that's cool, too. It's like one of those holographic things where it's like the cast
and
then the comic characters.
Ooh.
Cast, comic characters. That's pretty cool.
That's fun. Okay. And two badges, like legit Gotham imprinted hashtags.
Yes, Detective. Founded 1820. The Gotham, so, the official Gotham badges. I'm going to put
we
the,
are a part
on.
Of GCP.
I'm glad
now.
They sent two of everything.
So like, am I
figured we were just going to get one since it was
and
on one entry.
And then we'd have to fight over it.
I am totally putting on my Gotham detective badge.
As am I.
Excellent.
So for you, this is going to be really cold too, I'm sure of it.
A little bit. A little bit.
But it's awesome.
That's fine. I'm going to wear it around everywhere. Guaranteed.
Okay. Now, we may have seen some pictures online from other people and can't explain my excitement over two hoodies.
Two hoodies. Gotham hoodies. I want one.
I'm so excited. We may have been fighting over this.
We also both love hoodies.
Like, so excessively.
But here it is. Here's the Gotham hoodie. I think I'll be wearing this every show from now on out.
Yes!
Hey, actually, why don't we go ahead and put them on right now? You said you were getting a little cold anyway.
I'm kind of cold.
So yeah, let's go ahead and put on our Gotham hoodies for the show.
This is awesome!
Sorry, audio listeners, this will take just a second.
We
normally don't get dressed during the podcast.
No, not at all.
We normally don't get undressed either. Oh,
we
it is. It's very nice.
Oh my gosh, this is
my
new favorite
hoodie. The back of it is on my chair.
This is my... We're going to have to Instagram this later.
Yes.
Gotham
oh my
gosh,
hoodie.
This
I love it.
Is so amazing.
Oh, yeah, it's so soft
it's
and
soft,
wonderful.
It's cushy. There's the box.
We're probably making everyone feel bad.
Sorry.
Okay, hand me the box. No, I'm just kidding.
Here's the box.
Okay, well, let's see. I have my sheriff badge on. I have my Gotham lanyard.
I got my lanyard.
You might hear that clicking in the microphone throughout
Sorry.
The show. And I have my Gotham hoodie on, too.
This
let
is
me
so
get it
cool.
zipped up, maybe.
This is amazing.
Yeah, this is so awkward getting dressed on the podcast. Camera. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't realize there were going to be two hoodies. I thought
fox.
That...
Fox on my hand. There's oh, nice. Fox on my hand.
Fox on my
fox
hand.
Fox on my hand. Fox. What does the fox say?
Yes. The fox says Gotham hoodie.
The fox says yay.
Well, thank you, Gotham.
Thank you, Gotham people, fox the, people.
The people who sent
we
us all the
so
stuff.
We are so excited you can't even imagine.
It's so cool. And thank you for sending two
thank
of everything,
too. Thank
you
for sending
too.
Two.
That That's was incredibly awesome.
So super cool. Was that still you holding the thing up?
Okay, so now let's, I guess we should get into our non-biased review of
yes,
Gotham.
No, we are doing this totally for fun. Okay, ready?
Yeah, go ahead and hit us up with the rhyming, riddling episode summary. Okay, well, I guess we should go ahead and get into our game here. Now it's time for How MCU Are You? How MCU Are You? Victoria and Andrew, welcome to How MCU Are You? It's really hard to say, but it's kind of fun.
Thank you.
MCU Are You?
How MCU Are You?
You'll be playing against each other, but don't worry, it's all in good fun. We're going to give you each a classic Batman villain and a scenario, then you'll tell us how your characters would respond. John and Derek will be our judges.
Okay.
If they think your answer is MCU enough, they'll go like this.
If they think our answers are what enough?
Good. Enough.
Yeah, if it's good enough, they'll good go enough. Like this, and then John and Derek do their thing.
We have to. We had recordings for this, but technical issues. So we're going to put on really bad accents.
Excellent.
And show you how not to do accents. So for that, it will be a thumbs up, and it will be good point, well made, mate.
That's excellent.
Good point, well made, mate. Good point, well made, mate.
And
lovely
amazing.
Job. Lovely job.
For a wrong question, I get the pleasure of going. Wrong question, gorgeous.
Ah, Fish Mooney. He went all Fish Mooney. Fish Mooney.
There you go. You got to the finger, though.
There you go.
Then most points at the end wins. I'll keep track. Any questions from anybody?
I so lost.
So
you'll be fine.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
It's going to be tailored towards you.
Just have Watch. Fun with it. Okay,
I have some comics already ready that I can sign and send to you guys. Remember that.
Good point. Well made.
I'll note 4 points for bribe here.
We're good. Can we do the first one?
Yeah, let's go ahead and we'll start with Victoria / Montoya.
The first villain is Professor Anderson. Anderson was a gifted engineer and scientist who constructed a device that actually transported people into works of fiction. When he demonstrated the device to Batman and Robin, he did so by sending them inside a volume of Anthology of Fairy Tales.
Okay, so Professor Anderson sends people into books, TV shows, etc. Now, Victoria, I tailored this for you based on some of your answers from last time we had you on. And,
okay.
Professor Anderson has transported Renee and Crispus into the world of Game of Thrones. Crispus has been captured by Tyrion Lannister. What does Renee say to convince Tyrion he should let them go?
Hey, Tyrion. I think you're really cute. And I think your sister's, I don't know, hot. And your other brother's not. And can you let Crispus go because he's my partner? And I have some comics there I can sign and send you.
Okay, John and Eric, was that MCU or not MCU?
I got nothing, guys. I got nothing.
Good point. Well
good.
Made,
that
mate.
That was good.
Thank you. Yay.
That was good.
Okay, let's see here. Okay,
I think
Andrew?
Your sister's kind of hot.
Just kind of, though.
Just a little bit.
That was good.
Okay, Andrew, you're up next.
Okay, Barney Barrows. When Barney Barrows failed the psychological profile test required to become a Gotham City police officer, the dejected man took a job as a janitor at the police headquarters. His hatred of criminals kept him close to law enforcement. But after a freak accident in the police lab bathed Barrows in an experimental radiation, he found he had enhanced mental capability. He literally became a genius overnight. Barrows quickly deduced the secret identities of Batman and Robin and used that information to blackmail the dynamic duo.
Yeah, that should be good.
Okay.
Okay, and so the situation is, okay, there's this janitor. He working at GCPD. He gets exposed to this weird chemical, becomes an instant genius. And then Crispus comes across Barney the janitor as he's building a bomb to blow up – to blow Gotham PD sky high. Every cop is a target, and Crispus is right here. So now Barney is pointing a gun at you, Crispus. How will Crispus stop this crazy custodian?
Barney? When it comes to blackmail, I am the guy to talk to. I am the blackmail. I need you to put your gun down. I'm going to go get you a plunger and some Drano. I want you to go back to what you were doing before. And on your lunch break, I'm going to let you come into the bullpen, sit at a desk, and show me just how smart you are, because I'm stuck on crossword 9 down. I have no idea what it is.
Excellent. Okay, John and Derek, MCU enough
good
or not
point.
MCU?
Point? Good point. Good point. Well made, mate.
Excellent.
Mine didn't even make sense.
Gov.
See? Well, Victoria, you're going to like this next one then.
Yeah, go ahead. Next one up for Victoria.
Okay, the character's name is Brule, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brule was not only a successful cattle rancher, but also a secret leader of a gang of black market rustlers.
Yes, and the situation for Montoya is Renee and Crispus pull over a truck outside the Gotham City limits. Brule's driving a load of cows, but while Renee is checking them out, she finds a hay bale hiding stacks of cash. So she finds cash in the back of this truck with a bunch of cows in it. How does she let Crispus know things are going down and that things are going to get crazy without rousing the smuggler's suspicion?
She just looks at him like she usually does, like.
Okay, John and Derek, is that MCU enough or not
that
MCU?
That is very MCU.
That is very MCU.
I'll do this in a Fish Mooney voice because, you know. Oh, good point. Well made, madam.
That's Fish Mooney, who lives in Buckingham Palace, of course. That one.
Queen Fish Mooney.
Queen Mooney.
Okay, next up, Crispus.
All right. Wiley Derrick was a criminal who was also an expert makeup artist. He obtained a job at an insane asylum and preyed on the delusions of inmates who believed themselves to be the incarnation of historic personages. Disguised as Lafayette, he wanted to build an army of the mad and commit a series of crimes.
So basically a crazy makeup artist. He makes up crazy people as historical figures and wants to take over the world. Okay, so Crispus. As Crispus is returning home from a stakeout at Fish Mooney's club, he encounters General Lafayette, a.k.a. Wiley Derrick, recruiting soldiers for his mad army outside a soup kitchen. How does Crispus intervene before this villain gains steam?
I guess, first of all, I'd probably have to take off my jacket, drag it along the ground a little bit, and then put it back on and get online for the soup kitchen so that I can get up close and personal in front of him. And then as he's serving me the slops or whatever it is that I'm about to get, and let him give me the spiel, let him try and recruit me. And then I'll look at him and I'll simply say, excuse me, but I believe you've used the wrong foundation, and I'll just watch him crumble in front of me, devastated. I'll roll him over on the ground, cuff him, look at him again and say, I was only kidding, but I just knew I'd get you. Yeah.
That very smart, very strategic. John and Derek, what do you think?
Sure, does that sound very MCU to you, John?
It does. But go on.
I'm dying here. I just
early king. Good point, mate.
No, I'm dying to hear what he has to say over there with his.
Yeah, I know exactly.
He gave you the thumbs up. Yeah. He gave you the thumbs up. It was heady there for a minute. I wasn't sure it was going to happen. Okay,
all right.
Next up is Victoria.
All right, the Dodo Man, the villain.
The Dodo Man.
The villain known only as the Dodo Man was described as a psychotic who had an unnatural urge to obtain anything related to the extinct dodo bird. This led him to commit criminal acts, including brazen robbery of Gotham City's Museum of Natural History.
Okay, now, the Dodo Man breaks into Wayne Manor to steal their prized dodo egg. Go with it.
Dodo egg?
A yes, dodo egg.
They have a prized dodo egg
okay.
For some reason.
It's the wings.
Dodo egg. Got you.
And young Bruce can't get a hold of Gordon, so he calls Montoya for help. What's the
call
thing?
Me? Alfred. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Bruce
You're
does.
Coming in at-
Young Bruce. Bruce does.
Young Bruce.
So okay. What's Bruce. The first thing Montoya Hi. Does when she gets on the scene?
She makes scrambled eggs. No, I don't know. Montoya is the Dodo Man. What does Montoya do when she walks into the Dodo Bird? She investigates and she takes some prints and she calls Crispus to handle it because he has better answers. I know, that's a big...
I don't know. I guess we'll have to throw to John and Derek to see on that one.
Go on, put on your best female accent.
What was that?
Wrong question, gorgeous.
Oh. No! Okay, well, right now, Crispus and Montoya are both tied at two.
Okay.
I guess we'll move on.
Moving right along. Okay, Andrew, the Flower Gang.
This is for Crispus.
Three men with a high degree of horticultural knowledge combine their resources to commit crimes as the Flower Gang. The men robbed from around Gotham City using various plant-specific properties to gain entry or unlock saves. One such heist was a robbery of Morrow Art Gallery.
The Morrow Art
Morrow Gallery. Art Gallery.
Okay, so basically the Flower Gang, they use flowers to commit their crimes.
Shocking.
Okay, now Crispus, the Flower Gang strikes. Gotham City is covered in pollen. Seriously, inches of the stuff. It's like snow. You can't even drive in it. You hear the Flower Gang is running southeast at 3 miles per hour towards 4th and Grundy. Crispus is at 7th and Grundy and can run 3.4 miles per hour since he's traveling solo. At this rate, where will Crispus meet up with the Flower Gang, and who's kicking whose ass when he does?
Okay. I will probably meet up with them on the Pollen Knoll, and when we get there, I do know for a fact from profile that one of these Flower Gangs is a little bit of a weed, so I'm not going to worry too much about him. I'll probably take the first guy first, probably kick him right in the petals, take him down, and I'm pretty sure the other guy will just scurry away. That's pretty much how it goes. And if it's in 3 inches of pollen and it's covered in the city, he's not going to get too far. I'm sure Nigma will enjoy just watching him do his thing, and he'll let me know exactly where he is.
Excellent. And I do appreciate the strategy of taking the first guy down first. Let's see if it pays off for you. John and Derek.
Well, Pal, good point. Well made.
He's getting into this.
The voice is changing. The voice is changing.
It's deeper.
My voice is broken.
It's going to be Mr. T by the time we're done here.
Okay, let's see. Right now it's 3 for Andrew, 2 for Victoria.
Oh, he won. Oh. I'm going to gloat
okay,
later.
You know what we can do? We're going to do an emergency tiebreaker. This one is worth 5 billion points, okay? And we're going to
give
each of you an opportunity to answer. And this is for – it's actually a Batman the Animated Series character called the Condiment King. Emery.
Okay, the Condiment King, created by Bruce Timm and Paul Dini for Batman the Animated Series, is a DC comic
Condiment,
villain.
Right?
Condiment.
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 Not,
yes.
Not Condom King.
Condom.
That's,
okay,
that's a whole different thing.
Store in South Philly.
Just making sure.
Okay, he uses various condiments, sometimes capable of causing anaphylactic shock, as his weapons.
So basically
he's squirting you with mustard.
Yeah, pudgy middle-aged man with a condiment gun. Okay, so the
Still sounds like the other word to me.
Okay, the Condiment King walks in while Montoya and Alan are enjoying lunch at a fast food joint. The king is waving around his condiment gun, threatening to spray hot salsa everywhere if they don't give him his old job back.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Are you... sorry. Go ahead. My bad. Sorry.
Just play the circumstances. Let's see. We'll start with this is for both of you. We'll start with Crispus. Crispus, talk him down. Talk down the condiment king with the salsa gun.
That's exactly what I would be doing if. Oh, there's a man in here waving his salsa around. No, sorry, spraying his salsa around by waving his condiment gun. Is that correct? Tell me I got that correct.
Yep.
Some man comes into the fast food restaurant, takes out his condiment gun, and starts spraying his salsa around. Is that what you asked me?
Those are the exact circumstances.
You've
yes.
called the wrong department, my friend. But that said, I would probably wait until he's run out of salsa, then go over to him and ask him to kindly, because we're in a restaurant, conceal his weapon. I can't believe we're doing this. conceal his weapon. And then ask Renee to come over and cuff him and stuff him.
Oh, no. Renee would be like, I don't want anything to do with that hot gun of yours, hot pong. So I'm going to enjoy my sandwich. You take care of this, Crispus.
I cannot believe the pictures I've got in my head.
Okay, I can believe it.
I think that game was a success.
I think that game was awesome.
I think you've both proved that you're both MCU, basically. So a round of applause for our contestants and our judges and our host.
Well done, judges. Well done, judges. Very, very good.
I don't know why you were doing a London accent.
Excuse me, my name's Fish Mooney and I've aged. Come in here to my nightclub. We're playing bingo in my nightclub.
Okay, so I have a theory about this episode.
I love your theory.
Okay, I'm pretty sure Fish's weapon did not hit its intended target. I'm pretty sure that Liza actually botched her assignment in this episode. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, you know, when she's given the poison, or not the poison, the sleepy time blend, and she's told to, you know, put it in the tea and everything. One, she totally could have stepped behind that table to be facing the door while she was pouring it in.
She couldn't do that because then somebody could see what she was doing.
Yeah, but with her back to the door, she couldn't see anyone coming in with... While facing the door, at least she could have seen a shadow or something and kind of palmed it or whatever. I mean, I'm just speaking from my experience of drugging people. That would be the smart way to do it.
Note to self, but always fill your own cup.
Anyway, because she drops the vial and...
Because of the wonderful things he does.
No, but she drops the vial and drops about half of the sleepy time blend out of it. So here's my theory. Here's what I think happened. Because she didn't use the whole dose, Falcone woke up when she was in there getting the papers. Mm-hmm. And so he's upset, obviously. He realizes what's going on.
I'm sure she ratted on Fish.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Because she was kind of starting to get feelings for Falcone anyway, or like kind of like, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. So he sends her down there with fake documents, whatever that those thread documents are, fake documents to somehow implicate Fish or Catcher. And, you know, so she goes down there and she gives Fish one more chance to kind of call it off. Because Falcone figured she deserved that, right?
Sure.
And so the second she's like, nope, I don't want that chance. We're going to kill him or we're going to, you know, tear down his empire or whatever. She just hands over the fake documents and yes, mommy. And
the mommy then, stuff.
But yeah, and the one thing that makes me doubt my theory on this a little bit is that, you know, Oswald's main thing this episode was getting that piece of information. And it makes me, since he's working with Falcone, what advantage is that information going to give him?
Hey, this is Bill Meeks, the jerk with the beard from Legends of Gotham. A couple weeks ago, we think we cracked the Wayne murder. Here's the evidence. Remember this guy in the purple suit from episode 2, Selina Kyle? Bullock bumps into him, then he goes, "Watch the shoes, clown." A simple enough request, and the bad attitude towards Harvey is probably deserved. But wait. Remember back in the pilot, when Gordon and Bullock determined the Wayne's killer is likely wearing a pair of shiny shoes? Now, if I was wearing shiny shoes, I'd get pretty upset if a drunk cop stomped all over them. So, a cute line, maybe a red herring. We thought Purple Suit Guy might be a potential Joker because of the suit and the clown reference, so we added him to our page of Joker evidence, then promptly forgot about it. That is, until episode 9, Harvey Dent. In Harvey Dent, Selina provides a police sketch artist with a description of the killer. When the sketch is revealed to us, the audience, he looked really familiar to my eyes. Then, I remembered the purple suit guy from episode 2. Has the Wayne's killer been hanging out in the police precinct this whole time? Is he a dirty cop? Or was he there looking for the episode's namesake, Selina Kyle, who was the only witness to the murder? And we still have the purple suit clown line. Didn't the Joker kill the Waynes in Burton's Batman? All very interesting, and all very inconclusive. We probably won't know for sure until the end of the season, but it's interesting to think about, isn't it?
Well, that's all right. Not a problem.
You're the problem.
That's true.
Always the problem. Robin, the boy blunder. We have had more fun together. He rides me, I kid him, but we have a great time, and especially doing Batman, because every day, every hour, it presented a new problem, but new laughs. And that's how we did the show on several levels. For the fun, as you get older, to see the gags and the jokes, and when you're kids, to be caught up in all that splash and adventure and learn how to live your lives. A Batman line, and that's why I'm here, Bert's here today on time. Batman would say, Robin, better to be 3 hours early than a minute late. Those homilies, you see, they worked.
Hey guys, y'all can ask Mr. West questions if you like.
Got a question. Both of you had pretty big opportunities, or became pretty big opportunities afterwards while you were filming Batman that you turned down. Adam West, you had an opportunity to play James Bond, and you had an opportunity in The Graduate.
Well, I didn't turn that down. Unfortunately, the studio wouldn't let me do it because they did not want to dilute the image that created with this enormous success of Batman. In other words, by me portraying another role, they felt that it might in some way take away from the reality to kids of me being Robin. And, of course, they found some other actor, I think it was a guy named Dustin Hoffman, to do the role. But, yeah, that which is really an amazing thing because, wow, I mean, you can just shows you how things can be spectacular, good, or not so good. Anything can happen in the movie industry.
And you look back now, and you guys are iconic. So, I mean, I was just wondering how you felt.
Oh, it's like life, you know. I mean, we all have trade-offs. You know, something good happens, something bad happens, you have to deal with them and try to balance your life in some manner. Now, for example, we're not doing the new Batman movies, the Dark Knight stuff. So we do miss the $20 million. However, the response that we get, the turnout, the love from people really makes it all worthwhile. Because how many icons are there in pop culture? Not many. And luckily, we became that. And that in itself, it's a matter of branding. And at first, when the series was over, you know, you feel like, I got fired now, another job's over, and I got to get something else, and so on. Whatever comes along, there's a lot of luck involved. But branding is terribly important. But we didn't look at it that way in the beginning. We thought, we're screwed. We'll never do anything else. You know, people loved the series, and we wore costumes, and we'll never get a job in other roles. But you know what? About 4 years after we folded the series, I began to think, and I know Bert did too, branding isn't bad if you'll use it and develop it. You know, look at Coca-Cola, look at Kraft Foods, look at the Donald. Well, now it's the Bert and the Adam. You know, it's just a matter of branding and writing with it and adjusting to it. Like anything else in life, you adjust to the problems if you can. It takes a lot of drinking.
I have a question on that note. The series is being played on cable right now, so you're being exposed to a whole new generation of watchers and young kids. Is that rebranded, or has it changed the impact of your turnout? So you're seeing some of the younger people come and react?
One of the nicest things that's happened, I think, to us is that we've been able to go on and, for example, when I do Family Guy, I get a whole different generation. But the wonderful thing about Batman is that you watch with your kids, then your grandson or granddaughter, and it's a whole family spectrum kind of show. And that's where we got lucky. And we tried to keep it as fresh as possible and as amusing as possible. And, you know, if a series is canceled after 3 years, 120 episodes as ours was, as Star Trek was, and they've gone on too. It's amazing what happens. And somebody told me the other day that it's a matter of you can become bored or disinterested in the material. But if you have an affinity for, or if you really love the characters, Bert and me, I guess, in this case, then you go on. But you have, and I think Bert and I got very lucky. It is a matter of luck, a lot of it. You know, we were given roles in a couple of things that we could do and do well and borrow from our own personalities. And it made it kind of genuine. And comedy has to be real to be played properly. You can't think you're funny, you know. Anyway, I don't want to get too serious and start to give an acting lesson because I'm not that good a teacher and probably a lousy actor. All right.
I have a question for the Bert, as you refer to him. We got a good classic Batman line from you. Do you have a favorite totally blank Batman from your time?
I never said blank.
No, you didn't. I just didn't want to feed you one.
Oh, well, one. I had 378, I believe.
But did you have one that just stood out where you read it and you went, am I really going to say this?
Yeah, I mean, actually I had one that people like, I actually didn't like. It was something like, holy strawberries, Batman, are we in a jam?
You see what I had to put up with. But the kids love that. And to try to explain it to your kids, why did Robin say that? You know, that's a challenge and something fun always.
How much creative control did you guys have in your banter? Was it that fluid chemistry between
yes, it
the two,
was.
Or was it all...
It all depended how far along we got in it before we got caught for changing the lines. And we did. We would. There was one time when Adam and I and Yvonne Craig as Batgirl were tied up in the Siamese human knot. And there was only supposed to be two lines. And Adam started ad-libbing, and then I started ad-libbing. And, you know, they're filming, and it's going on like 20, 30 seconds, which is like five times longer than it should. And the director's, wait a minute, this is not in the script, cut. But so we would do whatever we thought we wanted to do within the general framework of not violating overall the total concept of the script. And sometimes they'd let us do it. Sometimes what we did was better than what they'd written, and sometimes they said, no, we got to go back to this because we got to make this point because in the next scene, you know, that sets up something. So it depended on the situation.
I have a question for Mr. Ward.
Yeah.
Especially with the way the Dark Knight Rises ended,
yeah.
You being as close as a person could be to Robin even before you got the job, what your thoughts were on what it would take to make a good modern Robin film?
Well, you know, I haven't seen this most recent film. I intend to, but I haven't seen the most recent film. And I was told that there are like three very clear references to Robin in the film. And I was also told that this last Batman feature was the end of the trilogy with Christian Bale. So I don't really know what to expect. My guess would be as good as yours, you know. But obviously they're going to try to do something that appeals to the audience that goes to theaters, not necessarily the total audience. Because remember, Batman, what we did was in people's homes. We were in their living rooms. We were something that had to be presentable for children as well as adults. Whereas the films in the theaters today, you know, portrays Batman as violent as the villains he fights.
Just remember, they have their dark night. I am the bright night.
guys, we got one more minute left, so...
Anything you want.
This question is for Bert. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about working and doing, you know, stage fighting with Bruce Lee. And, you know, were you able to teach him anything?
Or? Well, no. Well, let me explain. Bruce and I lived in the same condominium complex. And so even though we had a scene together where we fought on Batman because we had the same executive producer, William Dozier, who was producing the film, and, I mean, the series that he was going to be in with, you know, Van Williams, So Bruce and I actually sparred. We actually did the fighting together, but it wasn't part of that. Mm-hmm. So when we did the scene on Batman, it was where the director said, we don't want either of you to look like you're getting the upper hand on the other one because we're all supposed to be good guys, you know. Mm-hmm. So they toned it down and stuff like that. But Bruce Lee was a great martial artist. He trained 8 hours a day. I remember going to dinner with him and his wife Linda, and when Brandon, his son, was like 6 months of age, we'd go down to the Chinatown, and of course he, being Chinese, could order all the most authentic stuff. But he was a great martial artist. But in that scene that we did together, it wasn't so much stage, it was just supposed to be like you're going to start to have a fight, and then it stops because the guys on both sides realize that we're all on the same team.
Last, Mr. West, quickly, your favorite Batman in the films, not you. You have a favorite?
No.
How can there be? All the others were actors. Adam and I, when people think of Batman and Robin, they think of the other actors as very fine actors. Okay, nothing to take away from them. But they're actors doing a role. We really, because of the way kids saw us, grew up with us. And now, when people come up to us like today, what you get is not just children. You get a whole series of generations. You get adults that are in their, you know, older seniors that watch Batman. Adults today, their children, who now are parents, and the whole family watched Batman and still does. We're on actually 3 times a day. We're on twice a day on the Hub, and then on MeTV coming out of Chicago. 7 days a week. That's a lot of exposure.
More than that in my house on the DVR, my 3-year-old. You're the only Batman and Robin he knows.
Oh, well, he has excellent taste.
Were either of you ever asked to do a Stanley style cameo in Tim Burton, Schumacher, Christopher Nolan?
I wasn't, and I think, I don't know, I can't speak for Adam, but I believe that the position they took was that they wanted to stay away from anything that could have any kind of lightness or comedy to it because they were trying to portray this very dark night.
Even, well, Schumacher?
Well, that's a whole different kind of thing.
Mr. West, did anything ever come your way like that? A Stanley-style cameo in the films?
No. How do you feel about playing Mayor of Cohog?
I have mixed feelings. He's very funny, and they say he's the funniest thing on the show, which is a nice compliment. But I have mixed feelings because many times I'm asked to say lines that I would never say in real life, which happens a lot to my actors. But in this case, because he's so absolutely nuts, and I can use the quirkier parts of my personality.
And there are plenty.
Shut up. And I can magnify that stuff. It's really fun to do. You know, thank you, folks, for making us and me an Atlanta citizen.
Oh, yeah? We were given really that award today. I thought it was an arrest. We were going to get arrested.
So did
and
I.
It turned out that we were actually getting an award.
This is Adam West Day, and we appreciate your attention. Thank you.
Thanks, all.
We will go on as you will.